What's up? Welcome back to another episode of the Clippers Beat. Hope you all had a delightful Thanksgiving and gave plenty of gratitude. We're coming off the Clippers win over the Portland Trailblazers, final score 117-97. The Clippers are now 16-6. They're 13-1 at home. Paul George, 25 points, had 6 threes. And how about Patrick Patterson coming off the bench, dropping 19 along with 5 threes? And of course, Montrezl Harrell, very efficient, 26 points, 9 boards, and 0 turnovers in 30 minutes. So for this week's episode, I brought in one of my best friends in the biz, and someone who's seen the Clippers recently and will see them again, Fred Katz of The Athletic. He's back in D.C. awaiting the Clippers' return this weekend. Fred, good morning out there.
Do people in L.A. realize yet that you're the peppiest human being who ever lived?
Rah, rah, rah. You know what? Fred just left me on the equivalent of podcast. You know when you leave people on read? Fred did that when I called him and let the music just play out. Because Skype has this delightful, like, boppy music, and Fred just let it go for a good 2 minutes before he decided to answer the call.
Yeah, because I knew you were gonna, you're just gonna get a dance in at 7 a.m. your time.
You're right.
You're just gonna be rocking out. You said like Night at the Roxbury. I just think like an absolute insane person.
Maybe a little bit of both. But you know what? There's beauty in insanity, and also probably a little bit of raw truth. So maybe that's what this pod is going to be comprised of. Just, you know, early morning takes is what we can call them, where they're not, where you haven't had like enough time to truly formulate your brain and like get adjusted to the day. And so you're just firing off these crazy takes. And maybe that's what this pod will be.
That might be what First Take is. Maybe a First Take we're at like, maybe a First Take we're at like 4 p.m, Stephen A. Smith would be like the most rational person in the world. But because he has to get up so early to do the show,
he's just delirious. That's such a good point.
Yeah, what if the show were at like 4 o'clock, he'd be like, look, I gotta look at the numbers and check out the video evidence before making up my decision here and making up my mind.
Imagine a world. Fred, I have to ask you, do you think after watching the Clippers and Wizards a couple of days ago, Sunday now, do you think the Wizards brought their defense back with them to Washington, D.C.?
I don't think they brought any defense with them to Los Angeles.
Yeah, I'm saying, I'm wondering, are we going to see a different scenario play out back in the Wizards' home?
They played 2 games in L.A. They gave up, like, I feel like they have given up more points in Los Angeles this year than the Clippers or the Lakers have.
Yeah.
It's wild. They gave up 275 points a week and they gave up 150 to the Wizards. They right now have the 30th. They are 30th in defensive efficiency right now in the season. I think the craziest Wizards number was confirmed last night. They're giving up 115.9 points per 100 possessions now, which is the second worst since 1996 to last year's Cavs.
On the right side of history.
Oh, yeah. And I think the craziest Wizards defensive number is the Orlando Magic are 28th in points per possession. They are barely ahead of the Knicks for 30th. Actually, they're tied, really, for 28th with the Bulls. So they are in second to last place in points per possession right now. They have scored 125 points twice this year. The first time was in a 125-121 win over the Wizards, and the second time was last night in a 127-120 win over the Wizards. They just like everybody who's coming in is just scoring outrageous numbers of points against them, and it is remarkable to watch.
You know what they say, Fred? Teams are eaten. They eat against the Wizards.
It's crazy, man. It's so ridiculous. Just they get beat on like – normally when you watch an NBA defense that's not a good NBA defense, they're not good. Like NBA players are so good that you can't just like go at an NBA player every single time and score unless you're – you know, maybe LeBron is hot or Harden's hot or whatever, right? Mm-hmm. But – But with the Wizards, what's amazing is normally, so you see, like, they find a weak spot in the defense, whether that's a player who's not good or a type of action that defense is good at defending, a type of play, and they go at them and they get that defense. That defense is really bad. They get that defense on the second action or the second effort or the third or whatever, and eventually they just break them down until they find a corner three and they just keep passing, whatever it is. That Clippers game, for example, Paul George was just going, okay, we're going to go pick and roll and try to get a – and looks like we're just going to try to get a mismatch in the pick and roll and go with that, which is how NBA offenses work. And he would go pick and roll, and he would go past the screen, and he'd be like, wait, they just stopped guarding me once I hit the screen. Okay. Like, they couldn't even finish what they wanted to do because they were too open to keep going. And then Paul George would just hit the three. It was incredible.
What's the best Scott Brooks cynical remark you've heard when it comes to talking about his defense? Because I love his dry humor. I live for his subtle jabs, but not so subtle jabs.
I think last night took the cake when Thomas Bryant is out for 3 weeks now, and they just did not have a center last night. And Scott Brooks really embraced the absurdity by beginning his pregame press conference last night polling the media and asking if anybody could play center. like looking at Chase Hughes from NBC Sports Washington and telling him that he can be on the team for the night, but he can't play. Asking if any of the color commentators who were there would come out of retirement. Told me that I'm good at writing about screening, but my pick setting is not good enough to be on his team.
Fair enough. That's pretty accurate analysis.
Actually,
from him.
He didn't know that I'm a pretty dirty screen setter. He's like, who the hell is gonna call an illegal screen during a pickup game?
That's fair enough. You've gotten the routine down well enough that you could probably get away with taking a charge.
But yeah, I mean, he made two marijuana jokes during that press conference, and I'm like, just about calling Don Nelson for help, and then realizing that Don Nelson is probably doing something else with Willie Nelson. And he said, like, what is Scott Brooks? It was the ultimate YOLO press conference.
You know what? What a treat to cover. I love that. I really appreciate it, and I appreciate that he's come to grips with the situation he faces. But wow. Thomas Bryant, so what do you see the Wizards doing at the center position?
Just playing through it.
Yikes.
Like they did last night. Play Rui there. I mean, Wagner should be back in a few games, but even so, he can't play a ton of minutes because he gets a lot of fouls. Like, he and Dwight Howard are both very good low minute players, but like, I don't like the way Dwight is playing this year for the Lakers.
Yeah.
He's very good in his minutes, but I don't know if Dwight is capable of playing 32 minutes, not from a stamina issue, but just because he's fouling like eight times per 36 minutes or something.
Yeah.
And Wagner is at about 7.5 per 36 minutes. So I don't know what you do with the rest of them, but no one cares. People in Washington barely care about the Wizards.
I know. I'm sorry. I got down the rabbit hole and I was trying to, you know, give you some space to grieve. No, I'm just kidding. But I mean, Fred, you and I both covered Paul together in Oklahoma City. Seeing him, what he's done through these first 11 games that he's back in action, do you think he's capable of – people aren't really bringing him up in the MVP conversation right now because it's all eyes on Giannis and Luka and a little bit of LeBron. But do you think Paul could be a sneaky candidate with how he's shooting already?
I think maybe he could be a candidate for fifth. I think that's plausible. Don't forget Harden, too.
Oh, shoot. I forgot about Harden.
You don't want Rockets Twitter coming after you.
Oh, no. Here they come. Here they come. Bring them on.
The scariest, most annoying crew of people. I think he could potentially slide his way into fifth because there's a number of people that could be number five right now.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, you could have right now, I guess it's probably Siakam.
Yeah.
Off the top of my head. But he hasn't played a ton of games and I believe he's still playing a shade under 30 minutes a game. He could plausibly get in there. The Clippers finished with second best record and somebody wants to give that to him. What's going to hurt him is number one, not playing, a ton of games. He's already missed 10 or so. How many games he missed? 10,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, he's already missed about 10. Actually, more than that. I forget. He came back, I think, 2 games after the 10th. So he might have missed 12.
They're going to rest him some. He's going to play at best 60-something games. Yeah, right. And that's in the territory where, like, you're not eliminated from getting votes or anything like that. But it starts to come into the conversation about how much did the 14 or 16 or 20 games that you missed affect your value? Because, I mean, I was a voter last year.
Yeah.
And the way that I do
my ballot, brush that dirt off your shoulder.
The way that I do my ballot, at least, I probably value games played more than the average voter. But, like, if I'm looking at it, MVP is most valuable. It's total value given.
Yeah.
You have to be on the court to give value. If you've played 10 more games than someone, you know, like he's not a top 5 candidate right now, but just I cover the guy using Bradley Beal as an example. Bradley Beal is averaging like 29-7 right now. He's an excellent player. One of the reasons I put Bradley Beal on all NBA last year when he averaged 25-6 is because he played 82 games. And he played 82 games the year before that. He's played every game this year. When you play 82 games instead of, say, 70 games, it's not like all of a sudden you're not a good player because you're at 70. It's not even that you're necessarily a worse overall player than someone who plays 82. But if you're really good, then the more you play, the more really good value you are going to add. And if you play 12 more games than somebody, that's a big deal.
Yeah.
It means you're providing about 12% more value, whatever the hell it ends up being, right? What's 12 out of 80? That's like, you know,
that's
14, 15%.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're providing 15% more value than another player. And that's a big difference. That other player, in order to be better than you, then needs to have been 16% when he's been on the court. And so, like, the games played thing is going to hurt Paul George, but we saw for about 50 or so games. You were there with me.
Yeah.
We saw defensively what he and Andre Roberson were like on the wings. It's just Paul George is a phenomenal defensive player. But he's also in his career been very fortunate to play with just some unbelievable co-stars defensively between Roy Hibbert right at the end of the tail era when Roy Hibbert could play the way he played and be phenomenal. And then with, you know, Roberson as a wing guy. And obviously those Indiana teams weren't just Hibbert. They were really good all around defensively. Dave West, George Hill. And now just this team where you got Kawhi and you got Patrick Beverley and when you put Paul George with other awesome on-ball defenders, he can just be a weak side, dominant defender, a guy who can cut off passing lanes, and then who you can still use as an on-ball defender because he's excellent at that too. It's just stifling because he is excellent.
Yeah, well, because I was going to say that's where Paul is elite, right? It's to be that roaming defender where he doesn't necessarily have to be the number one on-ball guy carrying a defense, and then he's got that knack for deflections and for steals. And I completely agree with you. He has been paired with other great elite defensive minds, but he really shines when he's able to kind of have his way off the ball.
Yeah, for sure. And what really, with him specifically, what really makes a difference. So when he plays – the last time he played with another really excellent on-ball defender, and Terrence Ferguson, don't get me wrong, Terrence Ferguson is a legit good defender. I'm talking all defense level, excellent defender, Pat Beverley, Kawhi Leonard. The last time he did that was Andre Roberson, who was, before he had that injury, which sucks for him, that he still is so far from coming back. But before he had that injury, you could make a legitimate, intelligent argument, Andre Roberson was the single best perimeter defender in the NBA. And what they would do defensively, Roberson didn't get a ton of – I mean, he would get steals because he was so good that he just put himself into places where guys would lose the ball. But Robertson didn't get a ton of steals because he never gambled. And he was always just guarding the opposing player's best ball handler.
Yeah, like watching him and James Harden, it's like they're dancing. Like when he would defend James, yeah.
He's the best Harden defender in the league.
Yeah.
Harden.
Oh, it's his birthday. Can't... It's Andre Robertson's birthday today. Happy birthday, Andre. Well,
happy birthday, Andre Robertson.
Sorry.
Okay. It's amazing to say this with the way Harden plays now, the way people talk about Harden. Relatively, Harden couldn't really get to the line against them because he didn't foul him. But that was because he knows everybody's tricks. And one of the things that he was absolutely unbelievable at, like literally the best in the league at, was saying, you are currently here. Not only am I going to push you to a place that's I think a great defender says, I'm going to push you to a place that's uncomfortable. What Robertson was unbelievable at was, I'm not just going to push you to a place that's uncomfortable. I'm going to push you to this exact spot. You don't like going to the left elbow. Guess what?
You're
in about
going to
3 seconds,
elbow.
You are going to be dribbling to the left elbow. And it was crazy. He angled his body. You couldn't get around him. And he was obsessive with studying other players' tendencies. And if you looked at Paul George's numbers with Robertson on, the Thunder would force a lot of turnovers with Paul George on the floor regardless, because Paul George is excellent at that. But don't just look at Paul George's steals. Look at the total turnovers on the floor, because that's the greater effect. And they would get about 20% more steals when Robertson was on the floor with Paul George compared to when Paul George was on without Robertson. And I think, based on the kind of defender that Paul George is, I think you're going to see a similar relationship with him and Pat Beverly, who's a different kind of defender
than Robertson. He's an antagonist, yeah.
Totally, and he guards different guys differently. I think he's better against great players than he is against good players.
Yeah,
but
that's a very great way of putting it.
But I think he is still obviously an all defense level phenomenal defender, and I could easily, especially on a team as good as theirs, where Beverly's already up all the time. I mean, it's just going to be intensity for, you know, every second of the 48 minutes every night from him defensively. I think Pat Beverly is going to be an all defense guy this year. And I think he and Paul George, he's not as versatile as Robertson, where he's going to be guarding like a bigger wing or something like that.
Yeah.
But fine. Then he and Kawhi can have that relationship in a playoff game or something, you know? Like, it's just going to be scary.
It is scary. And I love that when you're talking about this Clippers defense, the second name you mention after Paul George isn't Kawhi Leonard, it's Pat Beverly. Like, that's just, you know, it's so easy to talk about Kawhi as a defensive genius, but then to not mention Pat right up there is also kind of forgetting to see just how nasty this team can be. And Fred, I can't believe we're now 15 minutes into this podcast and I haven't asked you that if you're now a Clippers fan again after your hiatus over years and years of waiting. Back in it.
You know what's weird?
Don't tell me you don't have a favorite team anymore because you're in a journalist and you've lost your fandom for the game and you just want to see good basketball.
That is exactly the case. But I was – when they signed Kawhi, I was – I just, like, didn't have a reaction. Other than – I had the reaction as an NBA reporter because it, like, happened in the middle of the night with Kawhi and the PG trade. And I was like, wait, what the hell? And I didn't know it was happening.
Uh-huh.
And I had the reaction everybody else had. And I went to bed. I was like, that's crazy. I was in Vegas for summer
league. Yeah, I was going to say, did you really go to bed because you were in Vegas?
I think I did because it was, like, so late.
Okay.
And then I woke up the next morning. And at some point the next day, I kind of had the reaction of, like, oh man, if this happened 10 years ago, like that last night would have been the best moment of like the best moment of my sports life. And I didn't even think about it, you know? And then I got a little sad. I was like, I feel like a little part of me died and I never had the funeral.
Whoa,
should we have
Fred,
the funeral?
No. We do not go morbid on this podcast. It is too early. It is the beginning of a day. And Fred, I'm going to write an alternate ending to the scenario you just described. And I'm going to say, no, young Fred woke up in Vegas feeling bright and optimistic. And he called his mom and said, Mom, bust out my box of Clippers fan gear. I'm returning to the promised land of fandom. And that's what you did. And that's why you are secretly wearing one of those LA Times jerseys underneath your work suit when you were at the game this weekend. Am I right?
How did you know that that's exactly how I speak to my mother? It's uncanny that you could realize that that's the exact tone and the exact phrasing that I take whenever I talk to my mom.
Mom, bust out my Clippers gear.
Bust it out, Mom. Go to the closet and show me what I used to have. And do it quickly. Stop being all lazy like usual.
And figure out how to switch from phone call to FaceTime because I'm in Vegas.
Ship it out to DC and make it overnight. You're paying for it.
Thanks, Mom. Okay. But, oh, wait, Fred, I had one more gem for you. I know you're a huge fan of when you go onto Basketball Reference and you find players' nicknames that nobody knew they had.
Oh, my God. Yes. We really are. Oh, have been friends for a long time.
Yeah.
That's not even a thing that I thought of as a thing that I love to do, but you're 100% right that I do love to do that.
Okay.
But I've never even thought of that. Are we talking about Sweet Mellow?
Yeah.
Sweet Melon?
Well, wait, no, but here's a segue to that. So I was just Googling Paul George this morning, as one does. And you know how when you Google a name, like the Wikipedia page, if you're important, will pull up on the right side and kind of give you like a hybrid or like a not hybrid, an abbreviated kind of synopsis of who someone is. So they have Paul's name as Paul Cliftonantho George. Did you know his middle name was Cliftonantho?
I think he has two middle names. I think it's Clifton Anthony. I think it got abbreviated in the thing.
No, I'm going to try the Google test again. It literally says Paul Cliftonantho George.
I think it's Paul Clifton Anthony George.
This is why we bring you on the pod to answer
it
the
should
hard.
It should be Paul John Ringo George.
Jacob Heimbauer Schmidt.
No, it should just be all the Beatles names.
Yeah,
it's half of the Beatles. It's truly amazing that he's half of the Beatles.
That you know what? Thank you for enlightening me. So it's not Cliftonantho. It's Clifton Anthony.
I've got Basketball Reference up there right now.
Okay.
And the Basketball Reference, which we all know is as good as a birth certificate.
Yeah.
Is Paul Clifton Anthony George.
Okay, wait.
But
I Google
think
test.
It now should be Paul Clifton Anthony George.
Just also try the Google test. I want to see if that works for you. Or you just Google Paul George. Brilliant podcasting here.
My God. This is the greatest podcasting ever. So yeah. Paul Clifton Anthony George.
I'm screenshotting it too.
One word. Paul Clifton. That is just not... That's not his name. It's not Paul Clifton Antho.
Oh.
It's just Paul Clifton Anthony George.
Dang it.
Just your run of the mill, two middle names.
I was feeling pretty optimistic. Okay, and then now we've got to do the Mello thing because I saw Mello last night. And you know what, Fred? For all the jokes people want to make about him, even coming off his sizzling start as Western Conference Player of the Week, it's so great to have him back in the league. And I know you're a Syracuse fan, or once was, right? Are you still a fan after having...
Yeah, I mean, I was a basketball manager there, so I know a lot of people there, and I like to see him. I like to see him do well.
Yeah, but that brings us to his Basketball Reference nicknames. What was your favorite one you uncovered? Because he has a whole bevy of them from what I remember.
Yeah, so I'm looking at Basketball Reference now, and I just, for those who don't know, Basketball Reference you know, at the top of your basketball reference page, it has your name, and then it's got the full name, you know, Carmelo Khayyam Anthony. And then below it, it's just got, you know, it's got your position and whether you shoot righty or lefty and your weight and your height. And it also has nicknames in parenthetical. There's always like one nickname that you look at and you're like, that is not that guy's nickname. And for Melo, we've got Sweet Melon. And I think I'm the only reporter to ask Melo about Sweet Melon.
And
to which he just responded, and Melo is freaking hilarious. Yeah. I feel like people, for as famous as Melo is, I feel like people don't know that Melo is so funny.
He is so funny.
Yeah, I asked, I said, what do you think of Sweet Melon? And then he looked right at me and obviously not seriously, but very seriously responded, do not call me that. And that's the one Carmelo Anthony Sweet Melon official statement that we have.
Oh, man. You know what? I'm looking for
it's his nickname in China. It's his nickname in China. That's why.
Sweet Melon.
Sweet Melon.
Fred, we're not allowed to mention China and the NBA in the same sentence anymore. So if you could please refrain. No, but I mean, it's cool. It's cool to see him back. It's cool to hear players like Paul George, who did get to spend some time with him in Oklahoma City, as we remember, talk about his return. And, you know, Paul and Kawhi both spoke about what Carmelo meant to them and how they thought he had kind of been treated prior to his return. So I think the players, for all the speculation around the impact Carmelo has on teams, quote unquote, locker rooms, I think we've seen enough evidence and heard from enough guys to show that, I mean, he's a player's player. They like him. They enjoy him there. He was seen as like a big brother, kind of wizened soul, I believe, amongst his teammates in the OKC. And I think there's kind of a misleading narrative out there that foreshadows Melo's arrival anywhere.
Yeah. I mean, it's definitely he was not great last night, but it's definitely fun.
Yes.
To see him playing well. The player of the week thing was very clearly outrageous.
Yeah.
But I've never cared or paid attention to player of the week at any point in my entire life. By the way, free story idea to anybody who's in LA, because I will never, if I ever get LeBron alone for a one-on-one, I will never waste my time on this.
But yeah.
If anyone does have a good story idea, do something with what in the world LeBron does with his 500 player of the week trophies or whatever the hell you get for
that's
that.
That's a good idea. Where does he stash them?
Does he might not even stash them.
Yeah, just toss them on the way out. Garbage.
Yeah, it might just be the equivalent of just like a used check.
Oh, damn.
I don't even know what you get. I don't even know what you get for player of the week. Like what do you get?
You get a cool image on Twitter that you can retweet.
Yeah. Yeah, that's all you get now. But with Melo, I never cared about player of the week. So people are so passionate. It's like, oh, Harden averaged 47-7. It's like
dude,
I never cared
about
player of the week before this. Why do I care now? But very a hilarious example of the NBA wanting to capitalize on the funness of the first week of Melo and attempting to do so. But it's great to see him scoring and doing well and all of that. We'll see if it continues to happen.
No, I was
I really enjoyed covering him.
Yeah, yeah. And I wasn't talking so much about his contributions on court, but I was talking about like the gems you get from asking him a question like, how do you feel about Sweet Melon? And his response. You know, like that's and he's, you know, I just think he's like you said, he's an underrated comic. He's honest, he's truthful, and you know, a word I've been misappropriating a lot, like just accidentally in the flow of speech is is clairvoyant. I gotta stop saying that because I say it in the wrong context all the time, but it's so fun to say. Yeah. But yeah, Melo is not clairvoyant. That's what I was getting at. But
he,
yeah.
No, I'm with you. He was you know, his rep is weird because his rep is that, and I get that it can get convoluted because I don't think he was good for the culture or the locker room in Oklahoma City.
Okay.
I really don't. But he was extremely well liked in Oklahoma City by everyone.
Yeah.
Everyone liked him. I mean, the lowest level staffers liked him. The PR people liked him. Management liked him. Coaches liked him. Players liked him. Like, across the board, he was well liked. He's a really charming guy, great sense of humor. He's unbelievably personable. He was the one guy in that entire organization who felt no qualms about saying whatever he was thinking to Russell Westbrook. He is the only player who was ever a teammate of Russell who would just on the record to the public make jokes about Russell stealing rebounds from teammates. I mean, he could just kind of say whatever and get away with it. I think players there really respected him. I think players around the league tremendously respect him, which is a big reason why you saw kind of that huge movement when he wasn't in the league, because a lot of players, it's not just an on-court thing. People respect him as a person, but I don't think he was good for the locker room there because of kind of just how he naturally wants to play, and I think how he still, even though it doesn't come off in any sense a malicious way in what I've experienced, just because of how high in the hierarchy he did think of himself. And so I think that was
– That's a really good
– Really what it came down to.
Yeah, I think that's
But it doesn't always come off as a malicious way, you know?
Yeah.
We've all got friends who think of themselves as maybe higher than they should, but it just doesn't come off in any sort of a malicious way. There's still these friendly, personable, funny, fun to be around people, you know.
That's a great kind of distinction, because it's too much of a blanket statement to say he's a great locker room guy, which I did just a couple minutes ago, but I agree with you. It's like he's a great locker room person in the sense that he's liked and respected and charming. Charming was a great word. But the other element of it is like, how much are you willing to sacrifice and be honest with yourself, and how that translates out onto the court with what you're doing for your team. And maybe there was some disconnect there with him in Oklahoma City. And that also has a negative impact in a locker room. So I think that's very fair that you made that kind of made sure to distinguish the two.
Yeah. And I mean, look, the way we talk about, I don't even have a problem with you saying that he's a good locker room guy, because mm-hmm. the way that we talk about locker room guys, coaches, we talk about this, all this, these conversations that we have about stuff that involves relationships in the NBA is so silly to me. We say so-and-so's a good locker room guy, so-and-so's a bad locker room guy. We said Zach Randolph was a terrible locker room guy forever. And then he goes to Memphis and we're like, hey, who would have thought Zach Randolph would become a great locker room guy?
Yeah.
And the reason is because we talk about NBA locker rooms as if they're not people. If you were setting up two people to be in a relationship and person one was funny, smart, goofy, didn't care about anything intellectual, and person two was extremely serious and only cared about talking about chemistry and the Civil War, then you probably wouldn't set up those two people. But they might still both be good friends of yours. They're just not good matches.
Yeah.
And so much of it is just like Melo could be a great fit in one locker room and not a great fit in another locker room. That's just how, like, it's not complicated. If you have a friend, you know that's how it works. If you've been in anything that involves a group setting in your life, that's how relationships with human beings work. And we just don't talk about that. Like, Lionel Hollins is the example I always use going back to Memphis. Lionel Hollins was a bad coach for the Brooklyn Nets. He was a great coach for the Memphis Grizzlies because he was a great coach for that group of guys. Coaches can be good players for certain good coaches for certain players and bad for other players. So much of it is just personality, fit, getting along, respect, all that. Melo can be a good locker room guy somewhere. I just don't think he was great in Oklahoma City. I do think he was good in New York. So we'll see.
I loved how existential this just got. So you are so right.
Kyle Singler style existential.
Yeah. I'll miss him. Kyle Singler, man. Oh, and okay, random. Here's another random nugget just for you to start your day with. Last night with the Blazers playing the Clippers, and you've got Dame and Melo on the floor at the same time. Dame is number 0, Carmelo's number 00. And I texted you, Fred. I said, well, how many teams have this? And you just laughed because I don't know if anyone's ever done a count on it. But I also tweeted it out, and friend of the pod, Aaron Larsoul, who covers the Lakers, he responded with this nugget. So just so I didn't leave you hanging with that information request, Fred, but according to UniWatch, this is the 19th time in NBA history, including last year's Trailblazers, who had Dame and Enes Kanter. As an aside, the 1991 Clippers also had a 0 in Olden Polynice. Polynice? Never heard that name before.
Olden Polynice.
Olden Polynice. I can't. Polynice. There you go. And a 00 Benoit Benjamin at the same time. So just to let you know, it's only happened 19 times in NBA history before. Baseball doesn't do it. Football doesn't do it. We are witnessing an event this season, so don't take it for granted.
Don't disrespect Clipper legend, Olden Polynice like that.
I know. I'm sorry. I gotta get a little more versed in my
Olden Polynice played for about, I don't know how many teams. He played for a lot of teams.
Journeyman.
I feel like he probably played for 8 teams.
I like it.
Play for the Kings. Play for the Pistons.
The good old days.
On that resume.
The LinkedIn was lengthy. Let's just say that, right?
Oh, yeah. Long form LinkedIn.
Fred, I got to get your before we plug your piece that you've got out here, I got to get your take on the Clipper City Edition uniforms.
They look like LA Times headlines. That's it. They look like the LA Times.
The old English
It looks
English
like
font.
The LA Times jerseys.
Yeah.
Yeah, it just looks like the LA Times.
And it's such a funny, like, you're so accurate, but it's also really funny because they're meant to kind of symbolize and speak for this lowrider culture that, like, the streets of Los Angeles, right? And when you think of the LA Times, you don't necessarily go that route, but I think, hey, let these jerseys speak for as many different groups as possible, whether it's hard-hitting journalism or our friend Mr. Cartoon with the old English font. Like, I think they can really be the voice of many different parties.
They're like Dan Wojcicki's jerseys.
Dan Wojcicki's jerseys. Wojcicki's jerseys. Wojcicki's jerseys. Dan showed me
hashtag stay Wojcicki.
Yeah, stay Wojcicki. Oh, that's a good one. That's a really good one. Okay, Fred, I know you've got a Wiz shoot around, or is it practice or shoot around this morning?
Practice.
I know you've got practice coming up, but I really, really wanted you to talk about the big kind of retrospective you have out with the athletic as of yesterday, because it's so funny. It doesn't matter what team you root for in the NBA. This is just for people who love basketball and love this league and love storytelling. So, Fred, take it away.
Yeah, so when I was covering the Thunder about 2 years ago or so, the Thunder were in Utah in December of 2017. And I noticed, I noticed that Steven Adams was wearing sandals in Utah.
The slides.
And shorts.
Yeah.
He was wearing slides, those slides with his face on them. And he was wearing shorts. And I don't know what is happening with my voice right now.
Okay. First, I have to give a visual description of Steven Adams' slides. They're orange with bright orange.
They're orange. They've got his face on them.
Yeah.
And his feet are just like ginormous, And he's wearing those, and he's wearing shorts and a huge winter camo winter jacket and a winter hat. I was like, why in the world are you wearing sandals to go outside? Like, don't you get freezing? And he was telling me, nah, I don't get cold, just my core. And I just need my core to be warm, and that's it. The rest I don't care about. I don't get cold in my limbs if my core stays warm. And I was like, I don't think that works. But that's what he does. And I spoke to one of the guys on the team like a week or two later, and they said that like they touched down in Oklahoma City and it was absolutely freezing and it was winter, and dude just got off the plane in his sandals and shorts, and that's just what he does all the time and how he wears things in the winter. And at that point, I was like, I feel like at some point I have to do a story on it. And so that's how quickly moving I am. Here I am 2 years later, finally doing that story. On Steven Adams wearing sandals in the winter and walking around barefoot in his spare time in public because he, as he puts it, can't be bothered to put on shoes, in a story that involves more curse words than any story I've ever done in my life.
Can't be bothered, mate. After your extensive research on this, would you identify yourself as a pedial nudist?
I would not. I like wearing shoes. As a matter of fact, I don't even really like wearing sandals in when it's warm out.
What?
I very rarely wear sandals. I like wearing sneakers of some sort.
That's where you lose your Southern California audience listening to this Clippers Beat podcast.
Yeah, live life. I mean, look, yeah. Like, if I'm like on a beach, then of course I'll wear sandals. But like, I'm pretty much in the other direction. There's no scenario in which like I'm going to lunch or I'm going to the grocery store or I'm leaving the house and it's summer and I'm going to put on sandals instead of shoes, unless I'm going to something that specifically requires sandals.
Did you make
like a pool or a beach?
Okay, that's fair. I am of the belief, I probably on the sandal spectrum, I actually am probably closer to Steven Adams. Like, I love being barefoot. I mean, there's certain places where I think it's disgusting, but like in general, walking around barefoot feels great. But I'm also very cognizant of where you're being barefoot. Steven, on the other hand, does not seem to give a bleep.
No, he is not. He's a he is one of a kind. I enjoyed one of the commenters in the story said I forget the commenter's name, but someone commented on the story, I think I'm in love with Steven Adams. Way to give zero Fs. They didn't say Fs, but I don't know what I can say on this podcast.
I think I'm in love with Steven Adams. Yeah.
Oh my God. Yeah, way to give zero Fs. And I think that made me laugh out loud, that comment. Uh-huh. And I think way to give zero Fs is a really accurate description of the way that Steven just laid himself out in that story. I have never done – it's funny because when I was putting it together – I was the one thing that I was worried about. I knew it was going to be good because Steven's – I had any anecdote about Steven is funny, and I had some good anecdotes that I that made me laugh. And mm-hmm. when they make me laugh, I'm like, well, they're going to be funny. As long as I just say what happened, I don't have to be funny. I don't have to write it like a genius. I just have to say what happened, and it's going to be funny. And Steven's quotes, I just have to type what he said, and it's going to be funny. But what I was worried about was people were going to read it and think, oh, he only put that quote in there because Steven cursed. Like I have one quote which is just totally normal, not a joke from Steven. He just drops an F-bomb in it for legit no reason at all because that's just how he talks. And I didn't want people to be reading it and be like, oh, he's only putting these quotes in here because there are curses. But what I need the world to understand is there are like 12 F-bombs sitting there in a Google Doc that I have that are just not even in this story.
Oh,
like there was more than – no exaggeration. There was more than a curse a minute during this interview that I did. So it's just I can't find something that didn't have like profane language in it. It's just all there. It's just how Steven Adams interviews. Which is unbelievable for an NBA player to just be like – and he never says anything offensive. He just curses.
That's just how he talks. He's never offensive. He's just raw. He's truly, truly unfiltered and brilliant. Love them. And you've
I love covering players who will show you who they are.
Yep.
Because so many guys are guarded.
Yep.
And I can't judge any of them for that. Because if I were an NBA player, I'm sure I would do the same thing. Yeah. I like to think that I wouldn't because, like, oh, I'm a journalist and I want guys to be open. But it's really hard to do that, especially if it's someone that you don't know. Like, if I don't know a player, I never judge somebody for that. And I think Steven I've known for years because I was on the OKC beat. And so I think he's probably more open with me than he would be if it was just a random journalist who he didn't know, because he knows that I'm not going to – I'm not going to sensationalize things he says. I'm going to be respectful toward anybody who I'm interviewing, and he knows that in our experience. But with Steven, he just has a way of opening himself up to people. I mean, that's just how he is as a person, not as like an interview subject, just as a human being, just kind of like that to everybody. You talk to people who work for the Thunder, and it's like you ask them name your favorite players that you've ever worked with. And like Steven's name is one of the first people, no matter who you're asking, no matter, you know, we talk about like how like it's hard to say good chemistry guy for one room, bad for another.
Yeah.
Steven's one of those people where it's just like
universal.
I don't care what type of, yeah, like, you know him. It's just like, I don't care what kind of person you ask. He's one of that person's favorite people. And part of it is because he can legit make anybody laugh. Because he's so funny.
And he's wildly smart. He's really smart. He knows what he knows.
Oh, he's unbelievably smart.
Yeah. I love it. I've gotten to read little excerpts and hear your storytelling throughout it. So I've got to dive in. But I love the Steven Adams stories. I love everything you're doing at The Athletic. Especially, you know, Clippers beat writer Jovan Buha for you guys. He's got great stuff too. And I know he's a shoe guy big time. So I'm sure his little, what is it called? A capsule? Is that what you guys call him?
Oh, the shoe blitz?
Yeah, the shoe blitz. I'm sure his shoe blitz will be a different angle than your shoeless blitz. But I'm so excited to read all your guys' work. Fred, for anyone who's listening, where can they follow you, especially during this weekend's upcoming game as the Wizards host the Clippers on their 6-game road trip? And I don't know if we'll see much of a different outcome, but I do think people should be tuned into your tweets because they're funny and they're honest, not clairvoyant.
Me on Twitter at Fred Katz, FredKatz. Listen to my podcast if you want Wizards content, Wizards After Dark, which is on iTunes, and you can also get it. Subscribe on The Athletic. Subscribe to The Athletic. If you want, you can get 40% off on The Athletic if you go to theathletic.com/wizardsafterdark, which is the name of my podcast.
It's the gift and that keeps on giving.
There you go. and if you're an LA fan who's just like an LA basketball fan, or you happen to be a Lakers fan listening to a Clippers thing, I did speak to Dwight Howard less than a week ago, one-on-one, and put out a piece with Dwight talking about kind of his time in Washington last year and his transformation into what he's become as this really good backup center role player and kind of in Los Angeles, and the way that he's kind of revived his career. And I really appreciated Dwight taking the time. I thought he really opened up. I thought he was really, really helpful for that. I always enjoyed interviewing Dwight because Dwight just likes to talk.
Yeah.
The guy just enjoys chatting also another guy who enjoys making himself laugh. So, I really appreciated him, kind of being as open. And he talked about how right when the season ended last year, when he only played 9 games and had the surgery, he called Tommy Shepard. At the time he was the interim GM of the Wizard. And now he's the GM. And he said that, he was going to lose 30 pounds and get back into the best shape of his life and help them win a championship the next year. And he was going to be there, and he never thought he was going to get traded. And then he got traded, and then he got the call that he got traded a couple months later. And he talked about it. He was surprised by that. And, correcting his reputation and how he's held true to what he said preseason about wanting to correct his reputation in Los Angeles and all that. So I thought he was good. So you can check that out on The Athletic as well. That's on both the Wizards and the Lakers pages.
Tons of content. Fred, thank you so much for joining. I know you got a jet, but we'll be following you on December 8th when the Wizards host the Clips. And thank you again for listening to another episode of the Clippers Beat podcast. I'm your host, Nikki Kay, and you can get this pod wherever you get your pods at or at clnsmedia.com.